Good morning, members. I'm not sure if we have a quorum yet. Today is Wednesday, March 8th. I'd like to call the meeting of the Environmental Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. We've got on the agenda today is the Governor's fiscal years 2018 and 19 MPCA budget presentation, the base budget report. We have MPCA here to do their presentation. You have a number of different items in your packets that will be referred to in the PowerPoint and so forth. I think we'll get started with the presentation. And once we have a... Okay, and members, we do have a quorum. So at this time, I'd like to move the minutes from March 2nd, 2017. Representative Johnson, would you move the minutes, please?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? And Representative Hornstein, I am sorry. I looked through here. It's not noted that you were well-behaved yesterday, but, okay, well, I'll just take that under advisement.
Add that to the...
Okay? Thank you.
I support that.
Thank you. So any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. So with that, members, we'll move on to MPCA and their... Excuse me. I got a frog in my throat. I was yelling at the TV too loud last night during the hockey game. Testifiers, would you please identify yourselves for the record and proceed with your testimony. Kind of help us out where you're going to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Michelle Beeman, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Pollution Control Agency. We appreciate the opportunity to present the Governor's budget for the Pollution Control Agency today. Oh, not on. Is that better?
Well, nice.
Okay.
Even Representative Cornish can hear you now.
Yes.
Thank you. I have served at the PCA for 6 years. I've been the deputy for the past 5 years, and I also happen to be on the former Citizens Board for 4 years, appointed by Governor Pawlenty in 2004. With me today is our Chief Financial Officer, Joshua Bunker. He will actually be speaking to much of the information in your material today. And also, as we move through the presentation, we'll be calling up our three assistant commissioners who oversee the three primary areas, program areas that we do our work in. You'll see the way our budget is also organized. I have Assistant Commissioner Rebecca Flood, for water policy, David Thornton, our Assistant Commissioner for air policy, and Kirk Kadelka, for Assistant Commissioner for land policy. Each of them will be able to provide some additional information as well. Our Commissioner, John Lee Stein, is unable to be here today. He's actually in Washington, D.C. Today he's speaking at a national conference on public health and environment, but tomorrow he will also be testifying before Congress in a subcommittee on water infrastructure. Also, while he's out here, he's hoping to be meeting with the Office of Management and Budget Transition Team to discuss what you've probably seen in the news as preliminary discussions about EPA's budget and recommendations there and how that will affect potentially our work here in Minnesota and also our work in the Great Lakes. So speaking of EPA, thank you. It's a good reminder just to start. I'd just like to start again with the mission of our agency. Our agency is designed to work to protect and improve the environment and human health. It's a simple message. It's a simple statement, but it's a broad range of responsibilities. We are the branch that delegated federally from the EPA to carry out responsibilities for ensuring that Minnesotans have clean air to breathe, clean water to drink and use, and clean land. To deliver on that mission, we obviously need resources, and we work in three primary ways to deal with pollution. Very simply, we can prevent pollution, we can manage pollution, and we can clean it up. And that's also the sequence in which it costs resources. Much like our own personal health, prevention is the best way to keep our costs down and keep ourselves healthy. In our world, pollution prevention means eliminating waste and pollution at its source. And for example, we have a small business assistance program that works with companies to reduce their costs and reduce potentially some of the chemicals and things that they use in their processes to be more efficient, to deliver services, but also to minimize pollution. Another example might be our work training local and state road salt applicators on how they might prevent fluorides getting into our water through use of less salt while still protecting the public for driving. The big bucket of our work is managing pollution. That's our traditional regulatory work with water and air permits, and basically assessing how much additional pollution we can allow out into the water, into the air, before we are creating a threat to the public health or the environment. We also manage pollution through other ways, such as grants to local governments, for example, to set up infrastructure for recycling, to manage solid waste that way. We also work, for example, training wastewater treatment operators in how to ensure proper management of wastewater in municipal facilities. Again, about managing the pollution that goes out into the environment. Finally, cleaning up past pollution is a big chunk of our work. And unfortunately, it's the most expensive, and it's because we have legacies of actions that we've taken in the past that continue to be a source of threat to public health now. It's expensive work. Most visibly, it's our Superfund program, our petroleum cleanup, brownfields, working with developers on cleaning up land to put it back into productive use, and also work such as our St. Louis River area of concern, dealing with decades of pollution being dumped into the St. Louis River, trying to clean it up both to be a healthy ecosystem, but also so that the riverfront is economically viable again and healthy both for people and for businesses. Minnesotans expect clean air, land, and water, not only for themselves, but to be healthy communities. But we also view our role as protecting clean water, air, and land because they are assets to the state. They are what drives our economy. It provides for that strong economy. For example, Minnesota has a lot of water, as we all know. A lot of it is still in very good condition. We have a benefit in that. Other states do not have that asset. For example, dairies are no longer expanding in California. In fact, they're leaving California. Dairies want to expand here. There's not enough water in California, and we have water. But we have to maintain that asset in order to continue to attract those businesses. We want dairies to grow here. We want to work with them. We have clean air here to a great degree. We are not in non-attainment, as that term is used, which requires additional regulations and additional restrictions on businesses. That's a good thing, but we have to maintain that in order to be, again, competitive and to have the air as an asset for our economy as well as for our communities. We don't do our work on autopilot. We are always looking out ahead. What is on the horizon? What is the next thing down the road that we have to work on? The agency has a strategic plan. It covers 5-year increments, and we revise it regularly. We look out and we say, what are those key things we have to work on? We focus in certain areas. We continue to do our core work, but we're always looking at what do we have to address next. We revise that strategic plan on a 5-year basis. In fact, this year is coming up for our next revision. And then we tie our program plans and our individual employee work plans to those focus areas that tie to the strategic plan. And we also have metrics with each of those goals and strategies. Senior leadership reviews those metrics, and we decide, are we being timely and efficient, and are we meeting our goals, and if not, what do we have to change to get us there? My point being, we are very active in managing both on what the program content is and now also what our budget is. We are, like all organizations, public or private, we evaluate where our budget pressure points are. And there are a few big ones on the horizon, in addition to things like inflation, increasing purchasing power, increasing labor costs. But we have things that come up that are unpredictable. For example, the new discovery of vapor intrusion, toxic vapors that are moving into businesses and to homes that we weren't aware of 5 to 10 years ago. And now we have to deal with it. It puts pressure on our Superfund program. This is a cleanup area where we have to decide, do we have people continue to work on the existing Superfund sites, or are we going to tackle this new area of need, and we need additional resources there?
Ms. Beaton, excuse me. Yes. Representative Abram has a question.
Yes, Deputy Commissioner, I'm quite interested in this vapor intrusion issue that you're talking about, a new issue that has just come to your attention at the MPCA. I understand that the limits have been drastically reduced. The new limit is what?
Commissioner Beaman.
Mr. Chair and members, you might be referring to a reduced limit on TCE, trichloroethylene.
I'm referring to the limit on VOCs. vapor intrusion into the homes, and I believe that the old limit was 20 parts per billion, and you reduced it to 2 parts per billion, according to an article in the Star and Tribune.
Commissioner Beamer.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'm going to have Assistant Commissioner Kirk Padelka come up, just because he might more directly know what you're referring to.
Mr. Chair and committee members.
Identify yourself, please.
My name is Kirk Padelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. To the question, the standard you're talking about is the TCE work that is really driving. It is a volatile organic compound, a VOC. Mm-hmm. And so that is, Department of Health has lowered that rate because of the impacts to a number of susceptible groups, including women who are pregnant or young children and developmental issues is the health concern that we're worried about. And however, even with that change, the issue of vapor intrusion, when we were looking at sites 10 years ago or such, was not something that we looked on our checklist because it was not something that we were able to have the scientific knowledge about. Now that we know it, and including the more protective standard to protect important populations, we have had additional work. But vapor intrusion work would have been there whether or not that standard became more protective or not.
Representative Huglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Assistant Commissioner. Was I reading that right? 2 parts per billion is the new lowered standard?
Mr. Padelka.
That's B with a billion, right?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the limits are set because a small dosage of a number of compounds can have adverse effects in folks, whether it's cancer, non-cancer illnesses, or that. Those are all driven by the scientific studies that Department of Health works on to make the determination whether or not it's protective. While there may be small numbers like that, and some of our standards are millions or billions, that's the point at which that little bit is all it takes to have a negative impact in humans.
Representative Hugo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner, at 2 parts per billion, what's the scientific error rate on your testing, I mean, in terms of calibration of the equipment and everything else, at 2 parts per billion?
Commissioner Padelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do have the technology to go down that low and lower in terms of our testing. We have quality control of our labs, a private lab to do the work along with the Department of Health. So we are confident that we can get down to that level for that contaminant.
Representative Huglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you really didn't answer my question on that. So you're telling me that you have the equipment that it can be calibrated down to 2 parts per billion and it's scientific error. At that level, you can still be very confident that you're not chasing something that possibly isn't there?
Commissioner Padelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you be a little more specific about the VOCs here that are under this new super reduced standard?
Commissioner Padelka.
Mr. Chair, and committee members, there are really 2 that are driving the work. One is PERC. It's a dry cleaning chemical that has been used a number of places. It drives a lot of our work. Dry cleaners, old dry cleaner sites are what's showing up and creating a large amount of work in our Superfund program. The other is TCE, it's a degreaser. It was used in a number of industrial settings to clean parts and other types of equipment. And those are our 2 main driving factors on soil vapors.
Representative Huglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question. And then, when was the last time that the dry cleaners were allowed to use PERC?
Commissioner Padelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, dry cleaners still are allowed to use them.
Really? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Padelka, I have one quick comment. You talked about important populations. I consider all populations to be important. I hope that that's what you meant when you said important populations.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit, when we're talking about exposure to these kinds of things, the difference between, you know, being exposed to it for a short amount of time versus it being present in a home, you know, where kids are growing up and spending a lot of time. If you could just talk a little bit about that.
Commissioner Fedelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Department of Health does the most work with that and could talk about the long-term versus short-term exposure, and they do take that into their standards and to their advice. When we do find levels, low levels of vapor intrusion where it is over the standards, we consult with the Department of Health, and they make the ultimate decision on health advisories. When we're looking at certain chemicals, there are ones that have short-term endpoints on vulnerable populations of pregnant women and young children, and so those we do act in a much more expedited manner and have different types of advice that the Department of Health goes out. So we do look at those two different parts.
Thank you.
Representative Becker. Okay. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Carlton County, we have the dishonor of having a Superfund site caused by pollution generated from a dry cleaners there, right there on the corner. Everybody drives by it. Several homes have been contaminated through the vapors. I'm just wondering, is there an average cost, or what does it cost to clean up one of those sites, or is it possible to clean it up?
Director Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it depends. The testing in that is a to find out the full extent of the plume, and once we find out that plume, it depends on the number of homes. The mitigation system for vapor intrusion is much like radon, so it is a simpler system, but it is depending on the number of homes that need to be depending on the number of homes that are impacted and need to be taken care of, that is going to drive the cost. So we have sites that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars, but we also have sites that reach into a million.
Representative Sundin.
I'm looking for alternatives here. You know, is there financial alternatives to just buy the home, excavate the soil and clean it somehow and start all over?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, if we have a source that we know that we can get at, we do try to take care of that. However, in the situation where purchasing a home, the systems are much cheaper to be able to put a mitigation system in and effective to the point where we are confident and protective of those individuals inside the home. That is the least costly method in, for instance, purchasing a home.
Representative Sidney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to imagine myself in one of those homes, and, you know, that's the greatest investment most of us ever make is the home that we live in, and all of a sudden there's contamination, and maybe someday you're going to sell that house and move on. I'm just wondering if there's any recourse homeowners can take against institution or dry cleaners or whoever contaminated that soil.
Director Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the good news with this is that once the system is put in, there is the protectiveness to the homeowners and the potential buyers. We have been working with realtors to let potential buyers know about situations so that they can continue to operate those systems, but they are protective in that regard. And we have found when we are able to, in general, clean up contaminated sites, whether vapors or others, it does retain or increase the property values of neighborhoods. It's one of those benefits that Deputy Commissioner mentioned earlier of our work that are beyond necessarily the human health and the environmental impact.
Okay. All right. Well, one more thing, Mr. Chairman, if I may. The chemicals that are used in those dry cleaners, are there alternatives, alternative chemicals they can use, would that be publicized somewhere where we can take our clothes to a safer provider for cleaning?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there are. The way the dry cleaner fees, one part of it is based on the chemicals used that come into the agency, and there are three tiers, each more have less environmental impact, and so that is the way that we have seen the industry slowly make changes. There are also communities like the city of Minneapolis, which have been proactive in working with dry cleaners to remove PERC from their city limits and by providing assistance and that information you're talking about.
Thank you. Commissioner Beaman, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, referring back to the budget challenge itself, that's one of the ones that I would say, again, emerging issues that we weren't aware of. A second similar one, groundwater contamination and construction demolition landfills. Again, this was something that we were not tracking and aware of until recently because we've been doing more groundwater monitoring near these construction and demo sites. These are typically unlined landfills. They're around Minnesota. In the past, construction materials were pretty inert. They were concrete, rebar, wood, metal. But as we have discovered over time, building materials have changed that have been dumped in these landfill sites. There's plastics, there's resins, there's glues, there's all sorts of things with different chemicals which are now leaching into the groundwater, and the groundwater monitoring is showing toxic chemicals, and there are wells nearby. So again, this is an issue where we are finding more information, and we're saying we have to help communities deal with this because we can't continue to let these landfills just leach the chemicals into the groundwater. So that's a challenge for us there. Meeting customer needs on automation. As you know, many of us, we want to do our business these days online, 24/7, automation, fast and convenient online. So we know that we need to be responsive to that, too. That's an increasing demand, and we're moving to try to get as many of our services online as we can. That's not easy, and it's not free. We have to work with our data. We have to work with software. We have to figure out how to make that accessible, as well as to protect non-public data from inadvertently being released. So all of that takes work. It's a new demand on us, and we are trying to adapt and find resources to do that more quickly.
Commissioner Beaman, what do you have kind of a working agreement with the Minute?
Mr. Chair, working agreement. We do have Minute as our IT support for the agency.
And would you anticipate that they are going to be increasing their, I'll say, fee that they charge your agency in the next biennium?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the projected increase in our rates for the next biennium is about $2 million a year.
Which is what percentage of your IT budget, compared to what they charged you in the previous biennium?
Mr. Chair, it's a 20% increase.
Thank you. Proceed.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, the last thing I would point to right now is just that what many agencies are facing and businesses are facing, which is the generational turnover of work. We have the baby boomers are retiring. About a third of our agency is actually eligible to retire in the next 3 to 4 years. That means a lot of institutional knowledge going out the door. And where that comes into play in the budget is that we have increased training costs, we have increased turnover, and frankly, somebody coming in just hired out of college, which is great to have them in the door, can't do things as quickly as someone with 20 to 30 years of experience. So we are in a transition period that is putting pressure on our resources there. And then finally, while not listed here, as I mentioned, we have the uncertainty of EPA funding. We don't know what will come from the federal government right now, but if those cuts, and particularly the cuts to state grants, are as being discussed, that could have a significant effect on some of the work that we do, because we rely on those state grants to deliver that core work, that delegated work that we have from the federal government.
Representative Backer has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My question is you're saying that about 25 to 30% of your individuals will be retiring. When they retire, what pay are they generally? What would be the range of the pay when they're retiring? Are they 90, 100,000 salary? What is that range roughly?
And I would add to that their total compensation.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner Beaman,
if I can,
or
Joshua.
Mr. Bunker.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. That is based upon their accumulated vacation and sick leave, and then it's paid out directly from there. So if a staff member has used all of their vacation and sick leave, then they would be moving out without additional cost at the time of severance.
Representative Backer.
Okay, well, it's safe to say that they're going to be higher than the new people, so the new people will be coming in probably, I'm guessing, 45,000, 50,000. They're retiring 90,000 to 100,000. There's your gap to help with training. I do that with my business. I find ways to make things work instead of coming to us and asking for more money. In the real world, that's what you have to do. It's a suggestion. Thank you.
Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, we do actively review and manage our budget, and we look to see where we can have savings. And it's not just an annual basis review. I meet with senior leadership quarterly to go over where we are within the spending plan for the annual year, as well as looking ahead into the next year. We are looking to see where we can find savings. We looked back in the last biennium and found that we had a cumulative gap with our staffing because we were not able to have full funding for inflationary cost increases over the years or for our compensation. And so because of that gap, we have eliminated or frozen a number of positions. to address that. We take care of that to live within our means ourselves. We also look to see where we can find savings, such as lease negotiations. We met with our landlord, and we extended our lease for 3 years, but negotiated a lower rate so that over the course of the lease length, we've saved over $300,000. We negotiated just in the past biennium. We looked at some adjustments we made to our use of fleet, using vehicles less, driving miles less, and we've saved $178,000 there. So we continue to look for where we can find those savings to offset the pressure points that we see elsewhere moving forward.
So, Commissioner Beaman, with regards to Minute, going back to that, is that something you negotiate with them, or is that just a bill that they send you and too bad, so sad?
Mr. Chair, generally they send us the bill. It's a rate for services. We can try to find out where we might use Minute less, but it's hard to predict that going forward, and generally they set the rates, and that's what we have to pay.
Representative Ugin has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, so on the Minute thing, so they send you a bill, and you're paying it. How do you know that that bill is competitive with the private sector, or if you outsourced that, but at least got a bid from someone else for the same scope of services? How do you know Minute is being competitive?
Commissioner Beaman.
Well, Mr. Chair, in some ways, there's not competition for money. Much of the basic services we provide. We get desktop support for computers. We have all of our data backed up on servers and data centers, and those are costs that are allocated across the enterprise, and we get our share of that. In terms of additional new work that we might seek, such as a new software package or a new platform, we rely on our chief information officers to be working with us on evaluating contracts. We do sometimes do contracts with outside vendors, and we are competitive there with an RFP. But for the ongoing day-to-day delivery of the IT system that we all rely on, Minute is who we use. We contract that out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, well, then, why the 20% increase?
Commissioner Beaman.
Mr. Chair, members, my understanding is that that particular increase was based on the fact that our data was now being moved from within PCA to the data center, and we have to pay hosting costs for our data being located in that data center, which we didn't pay before when we were housed in a small server in our building. It was part of the centralization that's being done by Minute.
Wow. Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I wanted to mention before we moved into the nuts and bolts of the data numbers is to point out again one thing that we've done in a significant way this year to additionally look to see where we had opportunities to be more efficient and to improve our processes is to undertake something called a Baldrige performance evaluation. PCA has a very deeply embedded continuous improvement program within our agency. We've gone back for 15 years doing things like Six Sigma and Lean and other tools to do continuous improvement. Our commissioner, Commissioner Stein, asked us to step that up even more this year and look to see how we can look at our agency-wide systems to see where we can improve. And so we launched an application for the program called Baldrige to look at that and using an independent outside evaluator. We chose to do that voluntarily so that we could see where we could improve. Baldrige, for those of you who may not know, is a nationally recognized framework set by the National Institute of Standards and Technology at the U.S. Department of Commerce. It was started by Malcolm Baldrige decades ago as a way to make American companies more competitive internationally. The program dives deep into organizations and evaluates its operations based on a set of 6 detailed criteria. So last year, over the course of several months, we compiled our own documentation, looked at all of our processes and metrics. We handed that to the Baldrige team, who are independent, third-party, non-governmental folks. They, in September then, came in, did a 3-day on-site visit. They interviewed 100 different staff, both in our office and in 2 regional offices. They looked at over 350 documents. Then they met and they put their evaluation together and gave it back to us. The result being In their view, we met all the requirements for a rating of excellence in all categories, and we scored higher than more than half of the companies that have gone through Baldrige for the first time. That gave us a sense of confidence that we are running a very good and lean operation. However, the point of it was also to get what they call opportunities for improvement. They identified our strengths, and they also identified areas where we could improve. That was the point. And so we are now taking that list, we are prioritizing it and deciding what we're going to tackle right away. We've already commissioned two internal teams to look at two of them, which are innovation and voice of the customer, how we can improve getting feedback back into the processes we use. And I would point out that other Minnesota companies that have used Baldrige include Cargill, IBM, 3M, and a number of health systems around the state. So we're using that information again to see where we can make improvements to run the agency even better.
Representative Ugham has a question.
Yeah.
And I do too, maybe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, so all right, continuous improvement process and Baldrige and everything else. So could you tell me what your quantifiable savings have been after you've gone through all of this? And then the second part of my question is the agency that does continuous improvement, are they billing you too for their services here at the state? Two questions.
Mr. Chair, member, to your second point, the agents, I'm guessing that you're referring to, is it MMB?
Yes, it's part of MMB.
Sorry, Department of Administration does have a continuous improvement for the enterprise. If we contract with them for something specific, we would pay for them, but we don't generally. We are doing our self-directed continuous improvement within the agency. Quantification, it would be probably program by program and project by project. We do track those metrics. I don't have a document in front of me. But we do track where those savings are, and often it can be in time as well as in dollars. For example, we are one of the agencies with the largest number of data requests from external parties. People want our data. A lot of them are developers who want to know where the various sites are, for example. We did a drill down in how we could speed up the time to respond to that data request, and we cut the time virtually in half, and we were able to eliminate two student workers on some of those data work because of the way that we made those processes more efficient. So time and money there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, yeah, I mean, I've gone through this too in private business and everything else, and I'd be very interested to see if you're tracking this and the cost savings, if you do have that data. It's always kind of fun to look through that. Thank you.
And one other thing with regards to that, to the Baldrige evaluation, Commissioner, I'd be interested in seeing that report. I mean, I'm interested in what they identify as your strengths, but I'm also then interested in where they see weaknesses and what we can do to help improve to make things better.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. We can get you that report.
Representative Hornstein has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there other state agencies that have gone through this Baldrige process that you're aware of?
Commissioner Beamer.
Mr. Chairman, no, not to date for a full agency. We are the first one to take that on, and people were surprised that we would do that, but we thought it was important.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, again, one more quick refresher for the structure of our agency. We work out of six broad regions. We have seven regional offices outside of St. Paul. Three-quarters of our staff are in the St. Paul office. I'd say we are a medium-sized agency. We have about 900 people working for us. We have both year-round and seasonal employees, the seasonal ones being generally in our monitoring area that are out during the warm season to monitor in streams and lakes, et cetera. And about 70% of our staff are scientists, as the nature of our work dictates. We have people trained in hydrology and chemistry, biology, engineering, soil science, very professionally oriented workforce that we have. And before I hand it off to Mr. Bunker, I just want to say the governor's proposed budget that you have before you for 18-19 does what we hope, which is address those emerging issues and those emerging new pressures that we have talked about and will continue to explain, but also reflect where we try to make our own internal redirection of resources. And so the overall budget before you for 18-19 proposed is actually a hair lower than what was authorized for fiscal year 16 and 17. It does include those requests related to vapor intrusion and the additional resources for our Superfund program for that, and for our online services, with business data, as well as trying to start moving towards helping communities in the construction and demo landfills. And our fourth request is the one we come back with every biennium with the, for the Clean Water Fund, to continue to focus on our clean water quality efforts, completing that 10-year cycle of assessing all of our 80 major watersheds around the state, which we are on track to do.
Representative Fisher has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to say I'm pretty impressed that you're looking at a budget that is lower than what was authorized for the current year. And it kind of surprised me a little bit, because I know that your kind of agency is one where it seems more and more work comes through. People are requesting more data. There are more permits coming through. So, you know, the lowering is just one part of the question. The other part of the question I have, or the big part, is what kind of growth are you folks expecting during that time? You know, is there going to be an increase in permits? And how do you folks handle some of those kind of increased demands that might be coming down the road?
Proceed, Commissioner Beaman.
Mr. Chair, members, in terms of projected growth, I don't know that I could give you exact percentage number. I mean, certainly the economy is doing well. Jobs, you know, jobs are doing well. And so with that comes increased requests for permits, and we are working through those in an expedited manner. We are meeting our timeliness goals as in the same fashion we have been in the past. So I attribute that to being very focused and very efficient in the work that we do. But as you can say, yes, there are, as much as we are cleaning up pollution, we are finding new pollution. There is no such thing as, you know, going away for pollution. So yes, we have increased demands, and that's, this is where we get into the prioritization of what we can maybe slow down a little bit on in order to focus on some of the newer threats. And we triage it based on threats to human health and the environment. So.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The budget question kind of brought something else up in my mind. So the ask is slightly lower. What has happened to the overall MPCA budget?
Commissioner Beaman.
Mr. Chair, in overall, in terms of our growth,
Mr. Bunker, maybe.
Mr. Chair and members,
yep.
The 0.3% actually reflects the overall biennial budget compared to our present biennium. So we are looking at a step down. We're not just indicating the amount of the governor's recommendation for change items, but instead really and truly the entire budget itself. And we'll look at that in a couple slides forward to talk about history and where this biennium proposed will line up.
Mr. Hegmeyer, can you shed a little bit of light for me, please, on the slide here where it says 0.3% lower?
Mr. Chair, I can certainly try to. I'm guessing 0.3% lower. Fiscal year 16-17, our actual budget, so it would be the combination of fiscal laws of 15 appropriations, supplemental laws of 16. There's a number of one-time appropriations in there that would show up for the 16-17 biennium that don't show up in the base for 18-19. But there's also governor change items for the 18-19 biennium, which some would include one-time appropriations. So you're trying to compare all of those. And then I'm not sure if this includes Clean Water Fund dollars, too. It does include Clean Water Fund dollars, too, apparently. And I don't know the difference between 16-17, 18-19 for Clean Water Fund dollars, because that's a significant chunk of money. I believe it's like $53 million for the current, or for the 18-19 biennium, and I don't know what it was for 16-17, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. And maybe that will be reflected in some of your upcoming slides. Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chair, at this point, I will turn the presentation over to Mr. Bunker to go through the details. And one of the things that you will see, we get questions our budget is organized somewhat differently than some of the agencies that you run into, such as health or DNR, where budgets are more directly aligned with their administrative structure of divisions. Our agency is different because the nature of our work is different, where we're dealing with pollution that moves between land, air, and water. That's how EPA sort of views its work as air, land, and water. That's how we organize ourselves. Administratively, we do have 7 divisions, but that is because we organize administratively for the customers and the people that those groups interact with. But our budget, as you will see, and Mr. Bunker will go through, is largely flexible and organized between air, land, and water so that we are able to be efficient and nimble in focusing on the threats that are most pressing today. So with that, unless there's questions for me, I'll turn to Mr. Bunker.
Mr. Bunker, proceed, please.
Mr. Chair and members, to continue what our Deputy Commissioner was speaking about, and as a refresher, especially for new members, as a way of background, the legislature in 2003 actually enacted our present structure, and that structure also was something recommended in 2002 by the Office of Legislative Auditor, and the recommendation was that our budget would be structured by water, air, land to consolidate multiple single-purpose accounts into larger, broader budget divisions to align funding with our related programs and to move closer to a polluter-pays funding structure. For environmental fees and taxes related to regulatory and non-regulatory work at the MPCA, that was organized into a pool called the Environmental Fund. And for those penalties, cost recovery, and other funds related to contaminated site cleanup, those were moved into a pool called the Remediation Fund. And then additional money, as needed, is transferred from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund to ensure the ability to complete construction and cleanup program work. And this change has been serving our customers and our agency well for over the last 15 years. Our budget over time, as was just referred to, actually we are looking at a 0.3% reduction in overall budget. On the color-coded slides that you have, the colors represent each fund, and you'll see spending for actuals through federal or through the state fiscal year 16, which is completed, and then we have anticipated spending for 17 to complete this biennium, and then into 18-19, which represents our proposed budget at this time. To address directly the question of clean water fund amounts, yes, in this past biennium, we've been working with clean water fund money is a total $55.4 million. Our request into this next biennium will be $53.7 million itself. The reduction reflects all our authorized spending, as Mr. Hagmeier spoke to, and we will take a closer look at the difference between this biennium, present biennium, and the proposed future biennium in just a couple of slides from now. Our staffing levels over that same decade reflect actual paid staff members through fiscal year 16, and then our anticipated spending levels to complete this fiscal year and then moving forward into the new biennium itself. While there have been some changes over this last decade, really our staffing levels have remained fairly consistent, and we anticipate completing out the last 3 years represented on your slide, approximately 25 staff members fewer than the levels at the beginning of this decade.
So, Mr. Bunker, oftentimes we see in budget requests and proposals that come forward is the addition of an FTE or 3 or 12 or whatever the numbers are. Do you ever present a budget where you actually have in your budget request a reduction in FTEs that's reflected by one less, where it's a line item almost?
Mr. Chair and members, especially where a one-time item has been approved in the previous biennium, when those activities finish those positions, often we would hire them as unclassified positions, and then through a vacancy management process, if someone else left in the agency, then we would move an existing staff person into continuing work and thereby lower the number of staff persons within our agency.
Right, and I follow that, but I guess what I'm asking for is then are the dollars that were appropriated to fill that FTE that was requested in the previous biennium, somebody else is going out the door, this person is moving into that position. Now there's one less FTE in essence, and how is that reflected as a request in your budget, if it is?
Mr. Chair and members, often those details wouldn't be seen as a request because those staff level would be connected with the past appropriations, and so when those appropriations end, we aren't re-requesting that level of funding forward, and so de facto our staffing levels would drop.
Right, but then that would stay in your base, though, correct?
If those one-time appropriations ended, then the staff would not continue in our base.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Moving forward, this is a slide that you saw with one of our sister agencies, just describing very briefly the various appropriation and revenue types that we work with in our agency. The direct appropriations are those that have spending limits that are set in law, usually they're for both years of the biennium. Sometimes, based upon your acts, those end up being one-time appropriations or for 1 year of a biennium itself. And the example would be appropriations that we receive for county feedlot grants. Statutory appropriations are those that are made in statute for ongoing payment as outlined in statute, and those would be outgoing authorities unless there was a specific expiration date. And a good example of our statutory appropriations would be federal grants that we receive for various purposes. Open appropriations are ones that have the authority to spend according to statute, again, for as much as is needed and or able to accomplish based upon funding balance. And an example of those for us would be Superfund cleanup and construction costs. And those are reported and based then upon the fund balance, and projected future year spending would exist for those. Two different types of revenue that we have on the slide are the dedicated revenue for those costs that are collected for a very specific purpose, and we will discuss those when we reach the environmental and remediation funds. And an example for us would be interest on our revolving loan accounts for small business loans. And then non-dedicated revenues would be those that we are collecting and then lose their identity, if you will, once they go into either of the funds. And the example in this tax season would be individual income tax that goes into the general fund itself, if you're all familiar. Our base budget report was a response to legislation of this last biennium, and instead of walking through our laws themselves, we have two handouts today. One that has green bars across the top that says base budget report, and the other that looks like this. Right? And the other is an excerpt from just our water budget program from the laws of 16 and 15. And I'm prepared to walk through these to show how the reports work, if you prefer, or I could move on depending on your preference, Mr. Chair.
Stay on course here.
Very good. The report itself is organized by year, very top, and then on the right side you will see the fiscal years that those monies are appropriated for. To keep us all on track, I've included some line numbers on the far left side of the document just for reference. And we'll begin walking through at the top of the water laws for 16 at the very top of your page. Referred on the far left of this document, you see a reference to line 4 of the total appropriation. That line 4, when you look over then on the base budget report, line 4, you will see that total amount of $2,620,000. And that would be the total of general and environmental fund dollars that are represented by the lines 2 and 3 on the base budget report and shown immediately below on our excerpt. Moving down on the portrait page of laws, the next line, you'll see a reference to line number 13, and that would correspond to the total water budget amount on the base budget report. I apologize, this is a little awkward back and forth. It is as it is. Moving into those appropriated items themselves, line 22, the highlighted $437,000 general fund monies on the law excerpt. You then look across, you will see on line 22 a description of that rider in the 16-17 biennial budget. You'll see technical assistance for municipal wastewater. And you'll see the amount only in the fiscal year 2017 on this report, as corresponds to the law itself. Moving down one budget rider paragraph in the law, you'll reach the second general fund appropriation that is shown as line 23 for an amount of $115,000 in law. And then we look over to the budget report, and you'll see on line 23 the working lands program that also was a one-year appropriation for $115,000. On line 24 of the base budget report, then you would see the subtotal of general fund water amounts of $552,000. That total then would be summed up to line 11 on this base budget report and represent the total general fund dollar amount for the laws of 16. Then moving up one paragraph in law, you will see an indication of line 31 next to the earlier 22. As this particular item has funding both from general and from environmental fund, the amount of $486,000 in the second year is appropriated, and you'll see that on line 31 of the report itself, which is turning to the second page of the report, because the report is organized by fund. And you'll see that amount is technical assistance, municipal wastewater, environmental fund on the second page of the base budget report, showing the amount of $486,000 in fiscal year 17 only. The subtotal is on the line directly below, on line 32, and that subtotal then would be added to the amount on line 12 on the first page of the base budget report. And then you would see the $552,000 general fund and the $486,000 environmental fund amount add up to the total that we see in law of $1,038,000. Any questions? Is that working?
I apologize. It's just the way we are here.
All right. Steve, raise your hand.
Okay, that's completing water for the laws of 16. Now moving on to the laws of 15, first special session below. In water, the total noted in the law would correspond with the total in the base budget report in line 18. I'm going to go down to line 25, the first paragraph of rider language that says $1,959,000 for the first year and then for the second year. Looking at the base budget report, the very last indicated rider on the first page will be the county feedlot grant program from the general fund, and you will see these amounts then in both 16 and 17, and because this is a continued appropriation, it moves forward into 18 and 19.
when we're looking at the laws again, we don't see any additional general fund appropriations on the first page. So I'd ask that you turn over to the second page of the laws. And beginning of the second paragraph down that has a 26 next to it, line 26, that's $250,000 first and second year from the general fund. When we look back at the general fund report, the base budget report, it would be the first item, line 26, on the second page, and you'll see those amounts there. Back in law, the next appropriation would be in line 27 for $500,000, transfer to Commissioner of Management and Budget, and so you see those dollars coming in on line 27, and you see them going out from our agency on line 28, just indicating a transfer out. And then the last general fund appropriation in law for water in 15 special session would be the $200,000 in first year only for a grant to Red River Basin. That would show up on line 29 of the report as a one-year appropriation. On line 30 of the base budget report itself, you would see then the totals for general fund only for laws 15 special session. And let's look only at fiscal year 16. You'll see an amount of $2,909,000. That subtotal is added to line 19 above on the first page. At $1,398,000, that does not have rider language connected to it, and that total then is wrapped up into line 15, which then would be the total of the laws 15 special session general fund at $4,307,000. I would be happy to continue through the environmental fund if you like.
Do you have a question?
Question or a comment?
This is
the most confusing spreadsheet I've ever seen. There has to be a simpler way to do this than to bounce back and forth like this. Because I was looking over these numbers and trying to add them up, and sometimes they add up and sometimes they don't. The other thing is, as long as we're on it, in case I don't get a chance later, go to line 26. You've got $250,000 kind of ongoing there, but there's no breakdown for it. You tell us what it goes for, and I assume it goes for split up between these four categories. Is that correct?
Mr. Parker. Mr. Chair and Member, that amount of $250,000 is appropriated each year from the general fund. For these purposes as laid out below. So that is not divided by the fiscal years, but that's an amount that continues each fiscal year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have a breakdown of what is spent on each category?
Mr. Bucker.
Mr. Chair and Member, certainly we do have a breakdown. I don't have that detail of that specific appropriation with me at this time, but we certainly can get that to you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I want to let him continue, and I think we should continue to go through this. I'm probably going to have more questions later, but I would really like to see a spreadsheet. I mean, if I ever got audited and I took my stuff to the IRS with this, he's going to laugh at me and say, you got like 24 hours to get back in it or something I can read. There's got to be a more simple way to do this. So, thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Bucker, on the statutory language, so you pointed out where line 29, where the number 29 is handwritten to the left, and you got the $200,000 in there. In the second paragraph of that, it says that the Commission of the Pollution Control Agency must work with the Red River Basin Commission, North Dakota Department of Health, United States Environmental Protection Agencies, 5 and 8, and plants and so forth. What is the outcome of that? Representative Wagenius talks frequently about outcomes. There's no report that's required here that I see in this. So what are the outcomes of those meetings with EPA and North Dakota and the Basin Commission and so forth? How do we know that we're getting the bang for our buck, you might say? I see. Commissioner Flood. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy at the Pollution Control Agency. And if you look at the line that just precedes that in that appropriation language, it says that the Red River Basin Commission must report progress on the plan to the House of Representatives and Senate committees and divisions with jurisdiction and submit a report by February of 2016 and 17 and a final plan by December of 2017. So there is reporting that's involved with this appropriation.
But I guess my bigger question is how did they go about having meetings, and was it on telephone or what? Because we did appropriate a couple hundred thousand dollars to do something.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Red River Basin Commission that receives this appropriation does convene regular meetings in order to address the requirements of the specific appropriation. So okay. they do meet regularly in person and also teleconference, as I understand it. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Johnson,
well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Bucker, for the verbal explanation. I was glad I got back in here to hear that, and I appreciate that. I understand what you're trying to do. And I also want to thank the agency for responding to needs that I hear in my area about the cost analysis. And it looks like you're beefing up the cost analysis for some of the projects that are expected and are anticipated. My communities need that, and the support for the communities to do that. My question is, what can you give us a little description about, maybe, I don't know if MMB is here, but evidently MMB would be doing the cost analysis. Can you describe that a little bit for us?
Mr. Bunker. Okay, going to friend.
Mr. Chair, that is a study that MMB was directed to arrange for. There is a consultant working on it, and I don't have the details beyond that. So, okay. We'll have our legislative director to answer this question.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. Greta Gothier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, so the legislature appropriated the funds and directed MMB to contract out for that study. They contracted with Barr Engineering, a major engineering firm in the state, and the language was passed in 2015, delineated how that study was to be done with comparisons between 15 different communities in the state. So they went through an RFP process to contract with Barr, and the study is completed and submitted to the legislature. There is a positive message in the study. I have a number of summaries of it here. I don't know if you want me to repeat all of that, but there also were some concerns that we had with the study. We feel there were several assumptions made in it that tended to overestimate costs. I can go into that more detail if you would like, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, no, you don't have to go into all this. I am curious, though, but what's the next step towards resolution of the concerns about the study or disagreements about the study?
Ms. Gothier. Four.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, I would need to touch base with the commissioner on that to see what his thoughts are for moving forward. I don't know what the next steps for that study are at this time. It was submitted to the legislature a couple weeks ago, and I guess in the throes of, you know, the deadlines and everything going on right now, we haven't had a chance to sit down and discuss what might happen next with that, although I'm sure the commissioner wants to do so.
Thank you. Just quickly, again, I appreciate that there's always challenges about assumptions on a study and that sort of thing. Those are legitimate questions. I recognize that. But again, my point is I want to applaud efforts that are being made and want to encourage efforts by the MPCA to really get after that cost issue, and so people can know, so the public can know what is the cost of these improvements. I think it in the long run, I think it improves our opportunity to improve water. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Proceed, please, Mr.
Mr. Chairman and members, continuing then with the Environmental Fund items within Clause 15 special session. We begin on line 33, indicated and handwritten on the side, and the corresponding appropriation, line 33, on your base budget report. And these are a little more consecutive, so it should move a little more smoothly. That is for $753,000 first year and $765,000 second year from the Environmental Fund. You'll see that on the report. Continuing forward on line 33, the next paragraph in law is $673,000 and $683,000 from the Environmental Fund for SSTS program. You'll see that in lines 33. In line 34, you'll see those dollar amounts. The bottom paragraph in this law excerpt is line 35 on the report, the wastewater lab, QAQC, and you'll see those amounts, 107 and 109, moving forward. You flip the excerpt of law. The top of the next page, line 36, is an amount of $913,000. That amount is shown on the very top of page 3 of the base budget report. And it also, on line 37, shows the transfer out from the agency of $677,000 each year to the Department of Health. That would conclude the Environmental Fund appropriations in water. Line 38 in fiscal year 16 would then show the total of those items at $2,446,000. That amount would be added to line 21 on the first page, which is an appropriation for water program operations, line 21 of $19,560,000, to wrap up to the total on line 17 of $22,006,000. And those amounts then would correspond to the first year shown in the law of the totals that we discussed for the general fund and the environmental fund. Law is silent on the state government special revenue fund of $75,000. That amount is for wastewater operator training each year, which would lead then to the total for water in the first year of the $26,388,000.
So, Mr. Bucker, if we had the bill that was passed in 15 and 16, we had those bills here,
then AIR would continue after that in the next sections, beginning with General Fund 16, et cetera. And the totals then of all of our bills combined for 15 and 16 would be the totals on line 9 at the very top of the base budget report. It would indicate all appropriations by law for the last biennium.
So, Mr. Bucker, then if you go to line 21 on this report.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
How do we account for where roughly $19.5 million are spent?
Mr. Chair, on I think it may be actually our fourth handout that we have, you will see all appropriations in the Environmental Fund. At the very top right, you will see all activities funded by the Environmental Fund. And that specific water appropriation itself is found on page 4 of that report, the very last appropriation on that page, appropriation R32-108, and then you would see the activity underneath that appropriation, and you would see the corresponding FTE related to those efforts from the agency. And that appropriation is large, and the activities continue on to page 5 of that report itself. And you will see the totals actually in this column that would represent the entire amount spent within this biennium. It does not represent at this time the total appropriated amount.
Right. So for future reference, it would be nice if this were incorporated into this. I think that would help all of us, Representative Green, and especially me, I teach by ed. Okay. You're doing a great job as a seventh grade math teacher right now, but I didn't do well in math either. So you see where I'm going. I'm trying to tie these things together so it makes it easier for us to see. And when, quite frankly, when people ask me questions about MPCA budget, I don't want to have to go like, I don't know. Okay. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair, moving forward in the presentation to our present biennium by fund, this is a restating of what we just went through for the base budget report, plus is adding in those adjustments that would be for statutory. And you see on the slide itself clean water funds that would have been the $55 million amount. Other statutory adjustments would include federal funds that come into the agency, all those grants, and then the one-time appropriations, such as we just looked over last time of the City of Painesville, had a $2.5 million appropriation for wastewater treatment plant upgrade, $868,000 for City of Mountain Iron for a wastewater treatment pond, and then as discussed a little earlier, the $500,000 appropriation for MMB to do that water quality standards analysis. So the base budget plus these additional items would bring us to the total of our budget for this present biennium, which is the $415.1 million amount. This budget as well does include transfers out to other agencies from those monies appropriated, as we saw in the base budget report. And for this present biennium, that dollar amount is $2.7 million that are appropriated to the MPCA that are then transferred directly out to other agencies. The base budget by fund for the proposed biennium, our future biennium, would be the base budget items that you noted in the report itself. And any changes that dropped off, such as the one-time appropriations, leaving us with this mix of appropriation types for this future biennium as proposed. The statutories are those that the legislature has approved for us to manage and sometimes apply for, as in the federal funds. And then the open appropriations themselves, $20.2 million of those open appropriations show up in our land program to address the cleanup activities for Superfund programs and closed landfill construction activities. Those types of expenses are found within our open appropriations. And I'm behind the slide. I apologize. Sorry. This slide then represents by fund the recommendation that would be added to the base budget amounts to come up with our total. You'll see that our requests cross 5 different funds: general, environmental, remediation, clean water, petroleum fund. And you'll see our change items, these proposals, arrayed as they would correspond to their various proposed funding sources. And we will spend time as we go through each budget program, water, air, land, et cetera, and we will discuss these items, each of these proposals in more detail at that time. The biennial comparison that shows the 0.3% reduction is shown on this slide. You'll see that four of our seven funds are decreasing, two are remaining relatively steady, and one fund source is increasing. General fund, I'm calling as relatively flat at an increase of $300,000. The environmental fund shows a 4% increase of $6.9 million. Remediation fund will drop $400,000. Federal funds, at this time, we are anticipating a decrease of $1 million. The special revenue fund itself, which is largely a double-counted fund that serves mostly as a cost allocation pool, will decrease by 6%. Then in other funds, we see those amounts being reduced by approximately 14% as a number of income agreements especially have ended, so we won't have some of those monies in future years. And then, as mentioned earlier, the decrease in the Clean Water Fund request would be a 3% decrease there. Some of that due to planned activities, others to the projected decrease in fund balance for Clean Water Fund itself. So the proposed budget by fund that represents then the 0.3% decrease from this present biennium totals $413.1 million. And you'll see on the slide the distribution by fund of those items. This budget does include a $2.2 million amount of transfers to other state agencies. And you'll see the largest of our funds that provide the incoming dollars, the environmental in blue, remediation, clean water, and federal, represent 78% of our budget itself. But focusing then on the environmental and remediation funds that make up 54% of our projected spending is reminding again that back to the restructuring that took place in 2003, these funds were designed to be interrelated and support each other. Both these funds are state government funds. They're not owned by the MPCA, but the MPCA happens to be the largest player and is responsible for reporting to MMB on fund balances for these funds. And it is indeed the health of these funds that allow us to accomplish really our goals and the expectations of Minnesotans for the clean air, water, and land. Move now into the environmental remediation funds themselves and discuss their receipts and uses. The environmental fund receipts itself, we note that by far the largest amount of receipts into the environmental fund is tax on garbage that comes in from the cost of collection out in front of folks' homes, representing 58% of the total receipts. This amount is up since last biennium, projected to increase by $5.8 million from the last biennium due to increasing costs. There was a question earlier about our authorities for receiving these funds, and so I should at this time refer you to kind of the last financial handout that shows the authorities for these receipts. You'll see that all the receipts related to our agency don't go directly into the environmental remediation funds, but into some of the other funds, including general fund and state government special revenue, et cetera. All of these lines and items represent different types of fees or collections or authorities to receive. And then moving on to the back side of the page will be the remainder of the remediation fund authorities for receiving. So I won't refer to this again unless there are any questions. Moving back into the environmental fund receipts with the slide in front of us, the Metropolitan Landfill abatement fees and the loan repayments that would be found in the other receipts slice, the very small blue, are the only two dedicated receipts that are shown in the environmental fund. 70% as well of the solid waste management tax goes into the environmental fund, which supports our programs, solid waste and landfill cleanup activities, etc. 30% of the total receipts for the solid waste management tax go into the general fund itself directly. The enforcement penalties of $3.3 million are found in the slice of other. That makes up the rest of the other. Those are not added to our spending authority, but are received as non-dedicated receipts. They go right into the fund balance itself, again, as would any penalties that will show up in the remediation fund. Moving on to the uses, if you will, of the environmental fund, the expenditures. The expenditures are proposed at $200.1 million. Again, you'll see some of the environmental fund spending on the handout. Mr. Chair, you would like us to consolidate into the base budget report. So those two items will then describe the activities of those appropriations that come out of the environmental fund itself. The transfer to the mediation fund, as far as uses, represents almost 20% of the uses of the environmental fund. $2.6 million of the environmental fund is the small slice at the bottom that is transferred to other agencies, that is directly appropriated from the environmental fund to other agencies. And those agencies include the Departments of Health, Revenue, the Office of Administrative Hearings, and the Attorney General's Office. Remediation fund receipts are projected at $66.4 million for the upcoming biennium. And you'll see that 87% of the remediation fund is actually a transfer from other funds. And so you'll see the environmental fund as the largest slice, and then the petroleum fund as 33% of the receipts annually proposed for this next biennium. Overall, the remediation fund would be showing approximately $2 million increase over this present biennium, which is 3.1% increase. The fees and cost recovery items include the dry cleaner fees that Assistant Commissioner Kadelka referred to earlier. That is a dedicated receipt and actually is moved out of the remediation fund, it's in a separate account within the remediation fund. And then the Metro Landfill abatement fees that you see on the slide at $1.9 million is also a dedicated fee for addressing Metro Landfill O&M costs. Moving on to remediation fund expenditures. I have to apologize to the committee. There is a mistake on this page. The MPCA land program amount should not be $59 million, but should be $60.5 million.
That's what I thought.
Mr. Chair. Yeah. The total of the slide, however, is not going to increase because, additionally, the dry cleaner account amount of $1.5 million that is halfway down the right side should not be seen as an agency expense. So an increase of the agency, 1.5, and dry cleaners move off to the side with my apologies. Spending in this present biennium actually was $72.1 million, so we're proposing a 7% reduction in the remediation fund for this future biennium.
What did you say that number was, 72?
$72.1 million. And the Department of Natural Resources then would, out of the remediation fund, has a direct appropriation to address illegal dumping of solid waste. Department of Health for private water supply monitoring and health assessment costs. The Attorney General for legal services related to closed landfills, although this amount has not been used since, I believe, a $3,000 amount in fiscal year 2013. The Department of Agriculture is for Agriculture Superfund program, dealing with the pesticides program that they operate. And Department of Employment and Economic Development worked on contaminated site cleanup and development grants itself. At this point in our presentation, we are going to pivot to our budget programs themselves, and we will begin with our water budget program.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name again is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy at the Pollution Control Agency. And certainly you know that as Minnesotans, we love our water and have voted to provide some additional financial resources to help protect and improve them. And this photo, these two photos are a clear example of the need and the result of our collective actions. Lake Bilsby, this is two photos from Lake Bilsby in Dakota County, obviously one where it's algal choked with algae as a result of having blooms on that lake because of too much phosphorus present in the lake, but due to extensive actions taken both by state and local partners, it's gotten to a much healthier response because of these targeted actions. The water program is found starting on page 38 of your binder, so if you want to take a look there. As I mentioned, in 2006, the legislature passed the Clean Water Legacy Act, which required that agencies develop a statewide approach to managing our water resources, and a handout in your packet shows that 10-year cycle for the watershed approach. And with amendment funding as well as other funding sources, we've developed the watershed management framework that's also being used by our local partners. This approach guides all of our actions, everything from monitoring the 80 major watersheds of the state, developing plans and strategies for water protection and restoration. This information is also used by our local partners, so it's very supportive of their efforts. Supported by grant funds, they can target their implementation dollars and actions to improve and protect our water resources as a result of this legislatively directed approach. Here's the budget trends. This chart shows them for the water program. And the general fund, which is in the dark blue at the bottom, is clearly decreasing. In FY 2008 and 9, which is not shown on this chart, but the general fund was 42% of the water program budget, and now in FY 18-19, it is down to 6%. The Clean Water Fund in green shows that it's up clearly. This is our work to monitor, develop those strategies to protect and improve our water resources in the 80 watersheds around the state. It's also used to provide technical assistance to local implementers for both stormwater and our septic system programs. The light blue is the environmental fund. It's been relatively constant over the time frame on the slide. And the dark green denotes federal funds decreasing in their percentage from 14% in 08-09 to 9% in 18-19, just 10 years later. At the very top layer of these slides is the Clean Water Revolving Fund. That's an interagency agreement with the Public Facilities Authority. They are able to provide us with some resources that helps fund some of our engineers to evaluate proposals from local municipal governments for upgrade or improvements to their local wastewater treatment facilities. proposed water program budget for FY18-19 is $123 million divided up into the programs that you see on your slide. And we can now, we'll walk through the direct appropriations and then the statutory appropriations and provide information as well as on any change items for water and then the other programs as we move forward. FY18-19 proposed water program budget, as I said, is for $123 million. In FY16-17, we anticipate completing out this biennia with $10.8 million that was appropriated to the Pollution Control Agency will go out as grants. So some of the money that's that comes to the agency is also distributed as grants. In terms of the direct water appropriations, $109.2 million. Specifically, 49% of our agency direct appropriations is Clean Water Fund, pays for extensive monitoring and assessment of all of our rivers and lakes around the state. We conduct groundwater monitoring network in the non-agricultural areas of the state. The Department of Agriculture does the groundwater monitoring work that's in the ag areas. The Clean Water Fund also goes to watershed computer model development and use, field investigations on what is causing unhealthy fish and aquatic biota or bugs, and look at the what should be there, what is there, and identify stressors to those aquatic organisms. We also use these funds to prepare Clean Water Act, Federal Clean Water Act required, you may have heard the term total maximum daily loads or TMDLs. Those are the pollution diets that, I know it's isn't a great term. It's the pollution diet that water resources may need to be put on to reduce the amount, identify and reduce the amount of pollution in order for those water bodies to meet water quality standards. We also use these funds to develop watershed restoration and protection strategies, which look at both restoring waters and those TMDL needs, as well as how do we identify protection activities. This is required as a part of Minnesota Statute 114D. We also have an enhanced level of implementation for wastewater, septic system, and municipal stormwater. Clean Water Fund resources also go to appropriations for the St. Louis River area of concern and staff capacity, and strengthen our local septic systems through general financial support and training and certification programs.
Ms. Flood, do human beings have TMDLs too?
Mr. Chair, hopefully that's rhetorical and not a direct personal question.
Very good.
Regarding our statutory appropriations, the $13.7 million, the legislature authorizes us to spend these dollars for the purposes for which we apply, work which would include federal funds for Clean Water Act Section 319 grants, Lake Superior work, additional water monitoring, and as I mentioned, our PFA-related work. Specifically for Clean Water Act Section 319, those are multi-year grants that we pass through to local units of government to fund watershed studies and implementation projects to reduce or eliminate sources of water quality pollution from diffuse sources. It also includes Great Lakes Area Management and Remedial Action Plan capacity grants. This is focused to restore and protect water quality in the Lake Superior Basin through cooperative efforts to reduce impairments and to minimize toxic chemicals. The monitoring that we do in this statutory appropriation is for measuring and for the prevention and control of surface and groundwater pollution, including monitoring coordination, water assessments, and data management. And we also receive grants from PFA so that we can review and improve the wastewater municipal treatment projects. And lastly, our clean water legacy funding will obviously be heard also in another committee, but again, here's a snapshot of that work. As Mr. Bunker mentioned, the requested appropriation is down for FY 18-19, 1.625 million, or a 3% reduction in our request. And identified on this slide are the key areas for which that Clean Water Fund appropriation is being sought. And I'm happy to address questions.
Questions, members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, my name is David Thornton. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Air Quality or Air Policy at the Pollution Control Agency, and I'm going to cover the portion of our budget that funds air-related activities. Obviously, our goal in Minnesota is to have air that is healthy for people and the environment, and for the most part, that is the case. We monitor air quality. We forecast air quality. And occasionally, we determine that levels of air quality are not going to be healthy, and we issue alerts and advisories accordingly, which mainly occur in the Twin Cities. We're blessed by our geographic location. We don't have any other large cities near us. When the wind blows like it's blowing today, it's coming from Canada, and except when there are wildfires in Canada, that's really clean air. Other times, occasionally, the wind blows from the south, and it blows pollution from Illinois, Wisconsin, and Missouri. And it's on those days, in warmer days, whether they occur in the winter or the summer, or the days when we have Canadian wildfires burning, that we sometimes find our air quality impaired. And while we meet air pollution levels in the state, the federal air quality standards, we are fairly close to the ozone standard and the fine particulate standards, and we are still maintaining a close watch over that. The air program can be found on page 45 in the budget sheets in your binders. And as a quick overview of the air program, air pollution levels in our state have been steadily improving over 20 years. As we've discussed before in the committee, science has improved. The air quality standards are tightened over time. So we remain close to the air quality standards, but we've been fortunate to not exceed them in the state. We're one of the only major cities in the country that meets the federal air quality standards. We track our emissions and our monitoring at 53 locations around the state. We conduct air permitting for sources that are larger sources of air pollution, things that you would typically think of as factories or industrial sources. But they only account for less than 22% of our air emissions. The rest of the air emissions come from what we have either referred to as non-point air sources or everyday air sources, and those are things like cars and trucks, off-road equipment, and even buildings like this one that have a furnace or a boiler in the basement. We have about 2,000 permitted sources in the state. 98% of them comply with their permits, which we think is a very good compliance rate. Most people want to do the right thing. Next, getting into the budget, this shows budget trends for the Pollution Control Agency's air quality program. As you can see, the vast majority of the budget comes from the Environmental Fund. And a small portion of the budget comes from federal grants. It's roughly for fiscal 16 and 17, it's roughly $33 million from the environmental, $31 million from the Environmental Fund and $1.1 million from federal grants. And our proposed budget is $34.7 million. Again, the vast majority coming from the Environmental Fund and also the federal grants there, which, as someone has mentioned earlier, we're not exactly sure what the status of those will be in the future. Let's look now at our air direct appropriations and talk a little bit about what it pays for. 100% comes from the Environmental Fund. It pays for monitoring across the state and in neighborhoods to ensure that standards protect human health. It covers our permitting activities, our technical assistance activities that we give to permittees to help them get their permits and comply with them, and it also covers the compliance assurance work that we do with them. We also have technical and financial assistance that we do to prevent pollution.
Mr. Thornton, excuse me, or Commissioner Thornton, excuse me, on the federal funds, on the previous slide before that, where you have 2%, do they direct to you how, specifically how those dollars are spent, or is that something that's given into the Environmental Fund and then you can do with it as you see fit?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, every couple of years we enter into an agreement with the EPA about how we will be using their federal funds, and that's called our, can't think of what it's called. Yeah, our performance partnership agreement, thank you. And it typically goes to efforts not related directly to the permitting program. So some of that money goes towards monitoring, some of it goes towards emission inventory development, some of it goes towards modeling, dispersion modeling, and that sort of thing.
But you have a fair amount of flexibility in I'll say negotiating how you're going to do that.
I would refer to it as some flexibility. There are expectations that come with that money that we've been living up to for years and years and years.
Thank you.
I guess the one thing I will add on this slide is that permit fees, air emission fees, and permit fees are the main source of revenue for this portion of our air quality budget.
Director Thornton, we have a couple of minutes left.
We also have a statutory appropriation, even though the circle is as big as the others you've seen. The amount there is not anywhere near as much. We get a special federal grant for fine particulate monitoring, and we have agreements with Marathon. Well, it's not Marathon anymore. I can't think of the name of the refinery. In St. Paul Park and Flint Hills, they give us a little bit of money each year, and we operate monitoring sites around there. We have a small increase proposed in our air program budget to cover inflationary costs of administering the program. This is something that is unique to the air program and air emission fees. It is required by the Federal Clean Air Act and is located in our statutes. The increase is based upon a change in the consumer price index each year, and it's one of the reasons our air program is able to generally maintain the same level of service. And this is the authority to spend the money. Complete.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
That's a good place.
Yes. We have completed the air budget program, and next we'd begin with land. Would this be a good opportunity?
No, it wouldn't. This would be a good opportunity for a break. Members, we'll come back tomorrow as scheduled, and I think what we'll do is we'll take up the lands bill first, so that heads up to you folks. You can wait 2 minutes before we have to start. It shouldn't take very long. So, with that, members, we're adjourned.